that kept enemies out. Not even Celebrant could huff and puff his way past the invisible barriers shielding the keep. And if the Dragon King ever breached the walls with his followers, well, nobody inside the keep would survive for very long. This invitation to the feast had to be part of Celebrant's revenge plan. There might not be a way for the Dragon King to directly harm her or Seth at the feast, but it had to be part of a larger strategy. Maybe if she stayed aware, she could use the feast to get a sense for what the dragons were planning. Kendra took out the horn Bracken had left her. Unicorns shed their first two horns before the third and final one. This was his first. Squeezing it tightly, Kendra tried to send words to Bracken, asking if he was all right, asking him to speak. Sometimes she could feel his words in her mind. Not right now. Where was he? Wounded? Alone? In need of rescue? The thought of him in danger somewhere was almost too much to bear. She felt so useless. An extremely fit fairy with grayish skin, a green shift, and dragonfly wings bobbed in front of Kendra before alighting atop Patton's headstone. She looked up at Kendra expectantly. "Hello," Kendra said. "Do you have news?" The fairy stamped a foot and splayed her arms.
"I wouldn't seek out a human for fun."
"Doesn't get much more fun than a graveyard," Kendra said. "What happened?"
"A dragon got into a brawl with a bunch of hill giants," the fairy said.
"Does that happen often?" Kendra said.
"Hill giants will fight just about anything," the fairy said. "That level of ugly doesn't worry about injuries. Most look better after losing a scuffle or two."
"Thanks for the info," Kendra encouraged.
"I'm not to the important part yet," the fairy scolded, stomping both feet.
"Go on."
"The fight was up by Wolfbane Reservoir," the fairy said. "They broke the dam."
"Will it flood down here?" Kendra asked, looking toward the outer wall of the keep.
"No, the water washed down Thirsty Gulch," the fairy said.
"So the dragons broke a dam?" Kendra asked.
"The giants fighting the dragon broke the dam," the fairy said, "and the flood took out the bridge at Thirsty Gulch."
"What bridge?" Kendra asked.
"Where the high road crosses Thirsty Gulch," the fairy said. "That's your news."
She flitted away. "Thank you," Kendra said. "Keep reporting on any unusual dragon activity." The fairy did not look back. Kendra leaned against Patton's grave and folded her arms. A dragon and some giants had gotten into a fight and caused serious damage. Was this an isolated incident? Did such brawls occur often? Or was this a hint of worse problems to come? It wasn't even Midsummer Eve yet. How bad were things going to get?
Chapter 5. Stingy.
"We're getting gear?"
Newell asked, biting into an apple as he walked along the corridor beside Seth.
"So he can feast with dragons,"
Doran said from the other side, untangling the string of a yo-yo as he strolled along.
"You should bathe in a nice marinade," Newell suggested.
"Maybe a curry?"
Doran asked.
"Do dragons fancy curry?"
"They're more into hot sauce," Seth played along. "I'll make a necklace of jalapenos."
"Use ghost peppers," Doran suggested. "Or Carolina Reapers."
"What kind of gear?"
Newell asked.
"From the storerooms," Seth said.
"We have a key to some storerooms," Doran said. "Agard gave it to us."
"That's food storage," Seth said.
"Ham, sausages, jerky, flour, oats, barley, honey, molasses, jams, cheeses, and so forth," Doran recited. "Enough to feed an army for a year."
"Or two satyrs for a month,"
Newell said.
"These are different storerooms," Seth said. "Grippa the Ridge Troll watches over them. I guess he can be tough to deal with. Henrik offered to come. Who needs a moose guy when you have goat guys? Newell asked.
He has more legs, Doran pointed out.
With two of us, it's a tie, Newell said. Besides, the Torrens look ridiculous. Six limbs is overkill. They hardly look like people.
He's pretty muscly, Doran said. Probably handles himself well in a fight.
Are we fighting the troll now? Newell asked.
Maybe arguing, Seth said. He is stingy with the gear.
You're the caretaker, Newell said. It's your gear.
That's why I didn't want Henrik along, Seth said. I can make my own arguments. I don't want to look weak.
Nobody would call you weak, Doran said.
A little gangly maybe, but that's your age. I'll just keep quiet, Calvin said from Seth's pocket. Not everyone at the keep knows about me yet.
Not many would notice you either way, Newell said. He took a bite from his apple and swatted Seth's arm. What kind of gear do you want?
Just some magical stuff in case things turn ugly, Seth said.
They have items that can protect against a castle full of dragons? Doran asked.
Not weapons to slay dragons, Seth said. Just gear. It's good to be ready. He slapped the satchel that served as his survival kit.
You'll have Tanu, Doran said. That means potions.
And his special courage potion works against dragons, Seth said. We tested it facing Marat last night. Tanu and I could both still walk and talk.
That would be embarrassing to freeze up at the feast, Newell said.
Kendra could always hold my hand, Seth said, but that's embarrassing too. They reached a door bisected into a top and bottom half.
This should be it, Seth said, knocking.
1 minute,
called an unseen accented voice. Seth paused, then knocked again.
I'm coming,
the muffled voice assured him. The top half of the door swung open. Grippa had small, snug blue scales with black markings. Three fins projected from his reptilian head, and bony spikes bristled at his joints. He had narrow orange eyes with slit pupils and a wide mouth full of sharp, pointy teeth.
Ah, the young caretaker,
Grippa greeted in unctuous tones. He glanced at Newell and Doran.
And a pair of satyrs.
His eyes returned to Seth.
Should I summon help? Are you a hostage? What is the ransom? Flutes?
Not all satyrs play the pipes, Doran said.
How about you two? Grippa asked.
Newell shifted uncomfortably.
Well, sure, on occasion.
I've never heard you play a flute, Seth said.
We're not showboaters, Doran said.
It lends itself to stereotypes,
Newell said.
I've also played some accordion, Doran said.
The troll slapped his hands down on the bottom half of the door.
How may I be of service?
I need gear, Seth said. Grippa stared.
A vague request.
I'm going to a feast at Skyhold, Seth said. I need some equipment to help me stay safe.
You'll be protected by hospitality rites, Grippa said.
And the dragons want to kill us, Seth said. So I want to be prepared. Henrik told me you have an amazing knowledge of the items here.
I'm deaf to flattery, Grippa said. The reason we have items of value in our stores is because my predecessors and I have protected them.
If we never use them, they serve no purpose, Seth said.
If we use them indiscriminately, they will not be here when most needed, Grippa replied. What exactly do you want?
See if he has an accordion,
Doran whispered. Seth stifled a laugh. Do you have a weapon that could come in handy if a dragon gets grumpy?
Fresh out of accordions, Grippa said. Perhaps the brownies could rig something for you.
I asked about a weapon, Seth said.
I assume that an accordion would qualify, Grippa said. We do have some pipes.
I'll take a set of bagpipes, Newell said, and the hours when you retire for bed.
We have 2 sets of bagpipes, Grippa said, and many rules against playing them.
I really need a good weapon, Seth said. You must have something.
We have more than 20,000 weapons in our care, Grippa said. Roughly 1/3 of them would be too heavy for a lad your size to employ effectively.
So give me the best of what would work, Seth said.
The best? Grippa asked incredulously. The best, you say? Why would you deserve our best weapon? Why take it to a feast? How would you even determine which weapon is best, the rarest, the most costly, the most powerful?
The most powerful that I could handle, Seth said. Grippa leaned forward.
Powerful in what way? Capable of killing the most people the fastest? Most threatening to a dragon? Able to cause the most structural damage to a building?
Those 3 sound good, Seth said. Grippa covered his eyes with one hand. The horn-like nails on his fingertips yellowed almost to brown.
You can't have any of them, let alone all of them!
Why? Seth said. I'm the caretaker.
I'm the property master, Grippa replied.
I'm in charge of you, Seth reminded him.
He said it, Newell muttered. Sure did,
Doran murmured in reply. Grippa grinned.
Is that how it works? You're going to bully me? My job is to guard the armaments and other property of interest belonging to this garrison. I decide what goes and what stays.
What if I fire you and take what I want? Seth asked.
Newell and Doran subtly sidled away from him. The grin was gone.
Have you ever dealt with a troll before?
Once or twice, Seth said.
Grippa drummed his fingers on the lower half of the door.
I'm going to cut you a break, because you're young. You're in over your head, and you'll probably be dead soon. Trolls don't appreciate threats. We have long memories. We don't give something for nothing. Trolls bargain.
And you work for me, Seth said.
Doran made a choking sound that may have started as a laugh. Newell patted his back firmly.
I was not employed by you, Grippa said. I have a contract. It has been in my clan for generations. I suppose there are protocols you could engage to relieve me of my position, forms to fill out, covenants to break, deposits to relinquish. Are you sure you can replace me? Do you know where the hidden rooms are and how to access them? You're familiar with the hundreds of secret stashes that contain the most valuable items? You have the expertise to distinguish a phantom knife from a dagger of despair?
You lost me at forms, Seth said. Is a phantom knife good? Does it cut ghosts?
The blade of a phantom knife can pass through solid matter, Grippa said, but the tip can be made tangible at any moment. It is primarily used by skilled assassins to kill without an entry wound.
So, a couple of those, Seth said. What does the dagger do?
Grippa balled his hands into fists.
We have 1 phantom knife. It would be nearly impossible to replace, and it would serve almost no purpose among dragons.
What would be most useful where I'm going? Seth asked. What would you bring?
Am I to deduce I am keeping my job? Grippa asked.
If you give me some good stuff, Seth said.
That's a threat again,
Doran offered helpfully.
Can I speak with our friend for a moment?
Newell asked, putting an arm around Seth's shoulders.
What are you, his attorney?
Grippa asked.
Attorney is such an ugly word, Newell said. How about advisor?
This will only take a moment, Doran assured.
Newell guided Seth several paces down the hall and leaned in close.
Trolls are hoarders.
This clown doesn't want to part with any gear. He doesn't want to let you know what gear he has. He thinks of it as his. I have a feeling Enric or Marat or a Gad could twist his arm and get him to move, but better for your reputation if you do it yourself. I'm trying, Seth said. Trolls like a good bargain, Newell said.
Why should I bargain? Seth complained. He works for me!
And he can work against you,
Calvin said quietly from Seth's pocket.
True, Newell agreed. Listen, you don't want to bargain with an employee. It seems weak, but maybe it's actually smart. Do you want good gear or not?
I want it, Seth said.
Then be clever, Newell said. Trolls are notoriously selfish. If it works to his advantage to give you good gear, he'll be much more willing.
Seth nodded.
I get it.
Newell patted his back, and Seth returned to the doorway. The troll watched him smugly.
Sorry, I've been under a lot of pressure, and I was being hasty, Seth said.
A common flaw of youth, Grippa said.
Useful in a race, though, Seth added.
The troll barely chuckled.
You've heard Soaring Cliffs Fell? Seth asked. The Dragon Sanctuary?
Everyone knows, Grippa said.
Dragons are in rebellion around the world, Seth said. Celebrant has threatened us. Kendra and I might not be perfect caretakers. Everyone knows we're too young. But we're what you've got right now. At least for a year.
Celebrant can veto any potential replacements for 12 months, the troll recited.
And he will, Seth said. He knows we're inexperienced. He thinks appointing us was a bad move. Maybe it was.
The troll shrugged.
You got the scepter. It showed toughness and leadership.
And we're really young, Seth said. We might fail. We could be the last caretakers Worm Roost ever has.
Grippa squinted pensively.
You against the dragons for a year? Even with the protections inherent to the keep, I put my money on the dragons. At least 3-1. That's assuming you have better advisers than these fawns.
What would the odds be with us as the advisers? Doran asked.
I'd pack my bags, Grippa said.
His eyes returned to Seth.
What's your point? Trying to scare me off?
I do have good advisors, Seth said. I mean to hold off the dragons. You want me to survive.
If you and your sister die, Celebrant becomes the sole caretaker, Grippa said. Same if you flee the sanctuary. The dragons rule Worm Roost. Yeah, I want you to live.
If we die, you lose all this stuff, Seth said. No Blackwell keep, no items to protect.
I hear you, Grippa said.
He paused, twisting his neck to the side until it clicked.
I don't want you to lose anything I lend you.
Seth has some experience with magical items, Newell inserted.
Quiet down, bagpipes, Grippa said.
He gazed at Seth.
Do you?
I used to have Vasilis, Seth said.
The troll's eyes lit up.
One of the 5 legendary swords?
They had been conversing in English. With a small effort, Seth switched to Duggish, the language of trolls.
I used it to kill Gralis and Nagiluna. Then my sister took out the Demon King with it.
I suppose I knew that, Grippa said. You speak Duggish like a native.
Part of being a shadow charmer, Seth said.
Where is the Blade of Legend now? Grippa asked. Perhaps I could keep it safe?
Seth smiled.
I have to keep that a secret. But I have used powerful items from time to time, including the Sands of Sanctity and the chronometer. As we get to know each other, I may store items with you.
The troll rubbed his hands together.
You need gear for the feast, in case something goes wrong.
What do you recommend?
Seth asked.
"You'll take care of these items?" Grippa asked.
"I will," Seth said, "and I won't let Blackwell Keep fall."
"Fair enough," Grippa said. "You'll want a weapon."
"Yes," Seth said.
"I have the Sword of Tregane, former Prince of Stormguard Castle," Grippa said. "It's a short sword. He used it as a boy. But no edge in our arsenal is as durable or as keen. The blade was created by Master Smiths with the help of the wizard Igar. It tends to push attention away from itself when unsheathed, and the effect increases with the size of the attacking creature. Also, in great need and at the price of the blade, with the phrase, 'sharpness be gone,' the blade will become a bolt of lightning. Using the sword that way would leave you with only a hilt. I advise against it, except in greatest need. The keenness of the blade and the distractor component are more valuable."
"And you have it?" Seth asked.
"Hidden, yes. But of course I have it," Grippa said.
Seth tried to maintain his calm. He needed to keep a good poker face.
"Would a bolt of lightning kill a dragon?"
"Depends," Grippa said. "Probably not under most circumstances. But the dragon would surely notice, and most beings would stand no chance."
"The sword will do," Seth said. "What else?"
Grippa stared for a moment.
"I have a pair of fleet boots."
"For wearing on ships?"
"Fleet as in fast. They help whenever you're in motion. Feels strange at first. They assist with every step. Wearing them, you will increase your top speed, and you can keep a quick pace much longer than ordinary. They're also unusually quiet."
"All right," Seth said, at war against a smile. "Anything else?"
"I hesitate," Grippa said. "The last item I suggest is dangerous to all. Under ordinary circumstances, it would be foolish to use, but if desperately cornered, you might be glad to have it."
"What is it?"
"The Vial of Horrors," Grippa said. "It will work only once. Unstop it, and every being present will see some of their worst fears come to pass, including you. The effect is all illusion, but incredibly vivid. Lasts only a few minutes, but that might be long enough to escape a tight spot, if you keep your wits."
"Sounds good," Seth said.
"If I were going among dragons, I would want it," Grippa said.
"What about my sister?" Seth asked.
"I figured you would mention her," Grippa said. "She might appreciate our rare and wonderful bow of plenty."
"Tell me about it," Seth said.
"Knock an arrow, and it is an ordinary bow," Grippa said. "But pull back the bow without an arrow, and one will appear. Up to 300 per day."
"Cool," Seth said.
"That is not all," Grippa continued with a grin. "Once the arrow has appeared, name any number of arrows remaining for the day, and that many will simultaneously fire."
100 at once?" Seth asked, unable to contain his excitement.
"Up to 300 in one shot," Grippa said. "If you want to use them up that way."
"They spread out?" Seth asked. "If you shoot a bunch at once?"
"Yes," Grippa confirmed, "with a tendency to seek targets."
"Maybe I should have that too," Seth said. Grippa shook his head.
"Up to you, I suppose. But that will leave Kendra without a significant weapon. Our stores are not limitless. I see the value in protecting the keep. I am offering those that could serve you best."
"All right," Seth said. "Anything else for Kendra?"
Grippa sighed.
"I hesitate."
"What?"
"It can be quite effective against dragons under the right circumstances.
Sounds like what we need.
It would be nice to keep in the arsenal, just in case, Grippa said.
We'll try to bring everything back, Seth said.
Grippa shrugged.
It would not hold off dragons forever.
I'm so curious, Seth said.
A sack of gales, Grippa said.
A bag of wind? Seth asked. Are we back to bagpipes?
To loose the drawstring of the sack is to unleash a mighty wind, Grippa said. With a dragon on the ground, the sack would do little, but it could cause real problems for dragons in flight.
How much wind? Seth asked.
When full, a fierce gale for at least a minute, Grippa said.
Is it full? Seth asked.
Currently, yes.
How long to refill?
It varies, Grippa said. The sack is fed remotely by wind collectors in several strategic locations around the globe. Under ideal conditions, the bag can refill in hours, or it can also take days.
Seth scrunched his brow.
If the sack can blow a dragon off course, won't the person holding it go flying?
The bag is magically stabilized, Grippa said. Otherwise, the holder would blow around like an untied balloon.
Sounds useful, Seth said. What else?
You don't know when to quit, Grippa said. I have offered all the most sensible options. If the feast goes according to plan, you will need none of them.
I have learned the hard way that life doesn't always follow the plan, Seth said. I like to be ready.
I cannot fault you, Grippa said. Sometimes good preparation helps prevent trouble from starting.
I hope so.
Shall I fetch the items? Grippa asked.
Sure, thanks, Seth said.
Grippa gave a little bow and withdrew. Newell sidled close.
What did you say?
It sounded like you were gargling mud, Doran added.
Seth had almost forgotten he had switched to Duggish. We reached an agreement. He's getting some magical weapons and items from me and Kendra.
Any mention of those bagpipes? Newell asked casually.
I think we better quit while we're ahead, Seth said. Chapter 6 Feast. Kendra sat rigidly in her griffin saddle as Didger the dwarf buckled her legs in. The creature shifted beneath her, saddle creaking, plumage ruffling near the neck. She patted the feathery shoulders, powerful muscles rolling beneath her palm. Didger went to the head of the griffin and took the reins.
"Steady, Sheba. The girl is already nervous."
He handed the reins to Kendra.
"Should you tell her that?" Kendra asked.
"She can smell your fear much better than I can see it," Didger said. "Fortunately, with Sheba, your worry makes her gentler. She's our oldest griffin and the most considerate of her rider. Gave her to you for a reason."
Kendra looked over at Tanu and Seth on their own griffins.
"And the others?"
"Sage for Seth, since she is faster and more maneuverable than some, but still obedient," Didger said. "He wanted Tempest, but her temperament is too volatile for a peaceful mission where she will be stabled by strangers. And Tanu rides Titan, our strongest griffin, since the Potion Master is, well, larger than some."
Tanu caught Kendra staring and gave a little salute. She smiled back, then, jiggling the reins, glanced down at Didger.
"How do I steer?"
"Hold the reins loosely," Didger advised. "The griffins know the way. When you leave the feast, Tanu will assist you into the saddle. Just tell Sheba, home. She'll do the rest."
"All right," Kendra said.
"Straps feel snug?" Didger asked. "Can't pull your legs out, can you?"
Kendra squirmed, but her legs were immobilized.
"I'm stuck."
"Perfect,"
the dwarf replied, his smile showing a couple of gaps in his teeth.
"When you're ready to dismount, pull the release down, right,
and away, like I showed you.
Got it, Kendra said. Somebody patted her leg, and Kendra turned to find Grandpa and Grandma Sorensen on the opposite side of the Griffin from Didger.
You take care, and watch out for your brother, Grandma said.
I will, Kendra promised.
Be polite, and make no agreements with Celebrant, Grandpa reminded her.
But don't take any of his sass, Grandma said.
I'll do my best, Kendra promised.
You come home safe, Grandpa said. Stay near Tanu.
I will, Kendra said. Grandpa and Grandma moved on to Seth, who was drinking a potion. Kendra knew the courage effects would let Seth and Tanu interact with dragons for about 8 hours. They each carried 2 extra doses just in case. Once the doses were gone, that was it. Tanu lacked some of the ingredients required to make more.
Come on, Mendigo! Kendra called. Time to meet the dragons.
A featureless wooden humanoid with hooks for joints, Mendigo stood his ground, which was peculiar. He always obeyed direct orders. Kendra had brought the animated puppet to Wormroost after Agid had restored him to her, and he had generally stood guard over her ever since.
Mendigo, come, Kendra said.
The limberjack held up both palms and shook his head.
Agid!
Kendra called.
Can Mendigo be afraid?
The wizard approached Mendigo.
What is the problem?
He asked.
Mendigo doesn't want to come with me, Kendra said.
That doesn't seem right, Agid said. He is an automaton. He follows commands. Mendigo, go to Skyhold with Kendra.
The puppet shook his wooden head again.
I've never seen him scared, Kendra said. When Seth and I fought Saleta, her poison nearly destroyed him. Only his hooks remained. Do you think he remembers?
Perhaps at some level he does, Agid said. Animating objects is a peculiar form of magic. As you bestow enough intelligence to follow commands and make simple choices, you risk bestowing some degree of individuality. Mendigo was created once by the witch Muriel, and then the wizard Vernaz helped me reanimate him from his meager remains.
"Won't you come protect me?"
Kendra asked Mendigo. The puppet shrugged and shook his head.
"There could be some residual trauma from his previous demise," Agid said. "He could be starting to develop a modest will of his own."
"It happened to Hugo when the fairies resurrected him," Kendra said. He started developing free will, but that came from their magic, I think.
This new quirk was not deliberate, Agid said, but a fear of dragons seems to have taken hold. Best to leave him behind on this venture.
Watch out for Grandma and Grandpa, Kendra said.
The limberjack immediately headed toward her grandparents, lingering nearby. Apparently, he had not stopped obeying orders altogether. Although the sun had just gone down, Kendra felt too warm in her heavy coat and gloves. Didger had warned that it would get colder at higher altitudes. Didger snapped his fingers, and Sheba followed him to the center of the courtyard. Agate joined them there. As the other griffins drew near, the wizard raised both hands, addressing all 3 riders.
"Sadly, by the time you return, I will be gone. There are other crises to deal with."
"You'll keep looking for Bracken?"
Kendra asked, squeezing the reins, her throat constricting with grief.
"He is alive," Agid said. "The horn of his you carry confirms that."
Kendra reached down and touched the horn strapped to her side in a sheath, like a knife.
"You can take it if it would help you find him."
"Alas, I already tried," Agid said. "I could sense he is alive, but I could derive no guess of where he is being held. I do not expect that will change. He wanted you to have it. If by chance he gets an opportunity to reach out, he may try to link his mind to yours using the horn. It should stay with you."
"All right," Kendra said.
"Good luck at the feast," Agate said. You are doing an extraordinary job here. Tanu, I will miss your company.
See you soon,
the potion master said.
Seth, stay out of trouble,
Agad said,
and far from the Blackwell.
I will,
Seth promised. Kendra knew there was a deep pit full of the undead beneath the keep. Agad had warned Seth on multiple occasions to stay away from it, out of worry that her brother might try to communicate with some of the undead denizens and somehow unleash them.
We will see you later tonight,
Marat said.
Fly safely.
Griffins away!
Didja cried, waving his arms.
Griffins away!
Two other dwarfs called out. Wings sweeping downward, Sheba leaped into the air. The griffin continued to rise, wings heaving to gain altitude as Kendra wobbled in the creaking saddle. Seth ascended off to the right, Tanu to the left. The three griffins climbed steadily, turning Blackwell Keep into a toy model behind them. The sunset gradually reversed until Kendra was squinting in the sunlight.
It's still day up here!
Seth yelled. Kendra waved to show she heard him, but quickly dropped her hand back to the saddle, because letting go made her feel unsteady. Meanwhile, Seth had both arms raised like he was riding a roller coaster. Kendra tried to enjoy the cool air in her face and the spectacular view, but when she looked down at the tiny trees beneath her, she couldn't help shivering at the thought of the enormous fall. She knew she was strapped to the saddle, but what if some of the straps broke? How old was the saddle, and how competent were the dwarfs who had cinched it on? What if it came loose? Didger had mentioned that Sheba was the eldest griffin. Still gaining altitude, her wings worked hard. What if the griffin had a heart attack? Did that ever happen? Kendra tried to stay calm. This was going to be fine. The worst-case scenarios in her mind were far-fetched. She would arrive without incident. To panic about imagined hypotheticals was silly. Under most circumstances, she would have also worried about running into dragons, but the invitation to the feast included a promise of safe passage through the skies if she chose to arrive by griffin. Was it possible for the dragons to break their word, or for one of them to go rogue, or for some other creature to bother them? She checked the bow Seth had acquired for her, secured to the saddle. If something did choose to attack, at least she could give it 300 arrows in the face. The sack of wind could come in handy as well. Henrik had been impressed with the items Seth had gotten from the storerooms, so Kendra knew they must be effective. As they flew higher than some of the nearest peaks, the chill intensified from cool to cold. Kendra became grateful for the heavy coat and gloves, and she ducked her chin to better hide her face from the wind. As different scenery flowed by beneath her, Kendra gained a greater appreciation for the sheer size of Wormroost. She knew the sanctuary was protected from detection by a distractor spell, but it still amazed her that such a large piece of land could go unnoticed by the outside world. Kendra hunched forward, head down, letting her hood block the wind as her cheeks became numb. Jagged mountains and ridges scrolled by below. After soaring over a high saddle between a pair of particularly tall peaks, she saw an enormous mountain, the entire top half carved into a gigantic castle. Heedless of the frigid air in her face, Kendra stared at Skyhold in astonishment. Several dragons circled around the rugged towers of the gargantuan stronghold. The closer she flew, the more she appreciated that the vast castle was meant to house dragons, not humans. Huge entrances yawned behind oversized balconies. Dragons roamed spacious terraces open to the sky and perched on long ridges. One waded in a wide, shallow pool. Though the castle had walls and towers, She saw no brickwork or mortared stones. Everything seemed to have been shaped by shaving away portions of the mountain. She assumed the top of the highest tower had once been the peak. A large dragon with bright red scales glided toward them, then wheeled around to guide them. Kendra watched the last of the direct sunlight disappear from the top of the highest tower. Sheba descended to a great opening at the base of the castle, about halfway up the mountain. The griffin landed smoothly on the rocky shelf, and hardy goblins in clean livery and powdered wigs hurried to help Kendra down from the saddle. They unbuckled her so quickly that Kendra didn't have to work the release on her own, and as soon as her feet hit the ground, the attendants were leading the griffin away.
"Wait!"
Kendra called, following Sheba. The goblins pulled the griffin to a halt.
"I need my bow,"
Kendra said, loosening a strap and pulling the bow from where it had been secured. She also grabbed the small quiver of 8 arrows meant to disguise the ability of the bow to produce arrows spontaneously.
"This place is big,"
Seth said, coming alongside Kendra.
"Has to be," Tanu said. "Think how huge our castles are, and they only house people."
"The fancy goblins crack me up," Seth said. "See the wigs?"
Kendra hushed him.
"We don't want to offend anyone."
"We're protected, aren't we?" Seth asked with a smile. "Might be fun to ruffle some feathers."
"These are dragons, not chickens," Kendra reminded him.
"Remember what I told you," Tanu said. "Err on the side of caution tonight. The potion will protect you from dragon fear, but it could also impair your judgment, make you overconfident. Don't say and do everything you think."
Seth shrugged.
"I can be as dull as we need."
"Where are they taking the griffins?" Kendra asked.
"I saw stables over that way as we were landing," Tanu said.
A large raven swooped toward them, hovered near the ground, and expanded into a gaunt old woman with moss and slime in her tangled hair. Prominent veins snaked around her thin, bare arms like leafless ivy. Bedraggled clothing hung like becalmed sails on her spare frame. Her lips had shriveled almost out of existence, and her small eyes failed to look directly at Kendra or Seth as she spoke.
"The new caretakers," she said abruptly. "Puppies in a weighted sack."
"Excuse me?" Kendra asked.
"Lobbed into a river,"
the old woman said.
"Never had a chance."
"Are you vodka?" Seth asked.
"Lowly vodka at your service,"
she said, inclining her head.
"You can turn into a crow," Seth said. "What else can you become?"
"This and that at need,"
vodka replied.
"Sad to see innocence abused. Funny, too. The sludge folk wish you well. Not that wishes can help."
"Do you know something?" Kendra asked. Shuffling away, the woman cackled, then spoke in a higher voice.
"Yelp! Yelp! We're drowning! Yelp! Yelp! Yelp!"
She gave a strangled little howl that dissolved into laughter.
"She's cracked," Tanu said. "Remind me to never become queen of the sludge holes."
"She thinks we're doomed," Seth said.
"Then she may not be very crazy," Kendra said.
"Come on."
Kendra led the way to the large opening in the wall of the castle. No door covered the cavernous entrance. A goblin guard in a furry hat stepped forward and croaked a single word.
"Invitations."
Tanu produced the invitation, and the guard looked it over. He touched the sword hanging at Seth's side and ran a hand along Kendra's bow. Seth spoke in a garbled language, and the guard spoke back, waving them through. Beyond the entrance, Kendra found a vast hall that took up a lot of the space inside the mountain with a single room. The immensity of the cavern seemed to shrink her enough that she wondered if she was having an experience similar to that of an ant entering a sports arena.
Gold dust glittered down on the walls and ceiling, giving the entire room a metallic shimmer. Complex grooves carved into the walls were either decorative patterns or perhaps some elaborate form of writing known to dragons. No furnishings interrupted the tremendous space except for a pair of long tables toward the center, sized for humans, set for dinner, with goblin attendants standing ready, white wigs in place, white gloves on their hands, brass buttons polished. Many guests were already seated in the high-backed chairs. An impressive assortment of dragons prowled the room. An oily purple dragon with a face like a mass of squirming tentacles, a bulky dragon with scales like armored plating, huge horns like a bull's, and a club tail, a sleek white dragon with crystal blue eyes, a dark gray dragon with two heads, a golden brown dragon with long quills bristling atop the head, down the neck and tail, and all over the bulky body. Kendra counted 16 of the giant reptiles in total, which probably spoke more to the enormity of the room than any other detail. At the far end of the room awaited Celebrant on a raised platform. Only his head and neck had been visible when Kendra had interacted with him on the perch. She had never really had a chance to appreciate the grand scale of his entire form. A flawless armor of gleaming platinum scales adorned every visible inch of his anatomy, from the majestic horns on his head to the tips of his razor claws. The Dragon King was glorious and lethal. Kendra could not help noticing the shining crown circling his head at the base of his horns, made from some metal more intensely bright than silver and studded with scarlet gems. A goblin with exceedingly fleshy cheeks stepped forward and blew a bugle. The brassy notes reverberated across the otherwise quiet hall.
"Kendra and Seth Sorensen have arrived with their manservant," he announced. "Also, Loli Vatka of the Sludge Holes."
Celebrant raised his head.
"The guests of honor," he said,
his voice as resonant as a men's chorus speaking in unison.
"Welcome, my fellow caretakers. Mingle with the other humanoids and please enjoy the food. We'll get to the more formal portion of the evening after you are fed and settled."
"Does the manservant get to eat?"
Tanu mumbled with a small smile. With a surprising rush of wind, Raxtus landed beside them.
"Greetings, Seth and Kendra. We'll talk more later. For now, just follow instructions."
He sprang away before Kendra could reply, gliding to the side of the room. A squat, plump goblin with a deeply indented face led them to the table and pulled back a chair for Kendra. Lord Dalgarel of the Fairfolk rose to greet her, impossibly handsome in his dressy uniform, complete with a sash, epaulets, and several polished medals.
"Greetings, Kendra Sorensen," Dalgarel said. "And Seth, of course."
"Are those medals of neutrality?" Seth asked.
"Charming as ever," Dalgarel replied. "Not all great deeds occur on a battlefield, though some of mine did, long ago. You remember my daughter Eve?"
Kendra noticed Seth staring at Eve in her simple but gorgeous gown. She was about his age and as exquisite as any of the fair folk. Seth walked up to her, took her hand, and kissed it. Kendra gaped in astonishment. She glanced at Tanu, who watched with wide eyes. She knew it must be the courage potion.
"How did you get to come?" Seth asked.
Eve waved an arm at the rest of the room.
"I've always wanted to see dragons. Father needed a companion, and Mother hates journeys." "It's amazing," Seth said. "I've only seen more dragons than this a couple of times. Never so many so close. Some are so weird." The porcupine one, she whispered loudly. And the one with the noggin like a hammerhead shark, Seth replied. The fear doesn't bother you? Father tested me, Eve said. I passed. I've always been brave.
We should sit, Dalgarel suggested, motioning Seth away from his daughter to the seat on the far side of Kendra. Seth followed the recommendation reluctantly, and Tanu sat just beyond him. Kendra took her seat beside Dalgarel and spread the silky napkin on her lap. Across from her sat a little man with a bulbous nose and a gray beard that ran along the underside of his chin.
"Well met, caretaker," he said, his voice rather high.
"The Grand Imperator Karzal," Dalgarel introduced.
"Good to meet you," Kendra replied in Gnomish. Karzal's eyes widened and his eyebrows raised.
"It has been many cycles since a caretaker bothered to learn our tongue," he said in Gnomish.
"I'm honored to meet you," Kendra said, pleased by the good impression she was making. She reached for the nearby goblet of water.
"Wait a moment,"
boomed a deep voice powerful enough to vibrate the glassware. It was the bulky dragon with the bull horns.
"Before everyone gets too comfortable, I formally challenge Celebrant the Just for the kingship."
Chapter 7. Challenge. The vast room inside Skyhold became utterly silent. All eyes turned to Celebrant. Seth failed to suppress his grin. How was he this lucky?
"Madrigus, my faithful servant,"
the Dragon King said smoothly, a hint of warning behind the words.
"This is a poor occasion for rude humor."
"Bah!"
Madrigus replied harshly, stomping his heavy feet and shaking his wings.
"I'm no jester. Prepare to surrender your crown."
Celebrant shook his head.
"You're a member of my personal guard, second in seniority. This verges on treason, and it is a matter for dragons. We do not handle such affairs before company. If you insist on a challenge, issue it after our visitors depart."
"Afraid to fall in front of your fellow caretakers?"
Madrigus asked.
"Adjourn to the proving ground with me now, or face your puny guests as a coward."
Celebrant's eyes narrowed, his gaze intensifying.
"Very well. But for this insult, I will disperse your bones without honor."
"You'll have to win first, small one,"
Madrigus said. Seth pumped a fist.
"Yes! Dragon fight!"
Beside him, Kendra looked shocked. Most people appeared astonished. Lord Dalgarel's mouth hung open. Seth looked down the table to Eve and finally saw his joy reflected. Tugging on a pair of white gloves, Dalgarel stood.
"This spectacle is a rarity indeed."
"How rare?" Seth asked.
"I've lived a very long time," Dalgarel said. "I've never seen it, nor met anyone who has."
"Will it be dangerous?" Kendra asked.
"Two of the most powerful dragons alive are about to fight to the death," Dalgarel said. "We are here by invitation, and are not to be harmed. But I will not be pressing for a close seat."
"There are close seats?" Seth asked.
Raxtus approached. "Sorry about this. You don't have to watch."
"I wouldn't miss it," Seth said. "Where's the proving ground?"
"Right here in the castle," Raxtus said. "It's basically a big courtyard. Father wants me to escort you and see to your safety."
"How do you know?"
Seth asked. "He can speak directly to my mind," Raxtus said. "How would you like that? Unfair amount of parental supervision, if you ask me. Come on."
Raxtus led them up a wide, slowly winding corridor. Tanu walked between Seth and Kendra. Seth realized there were no doors in this castle or small hallways,
only spaces that could accommodate dragons. Can Madrigus beat your dad? Kendra asked. Madrigus is tough, Raxtus said. He has killed more than a few dragons over the years. He has thick, strong scales and seems built to shred dragon hides. His whole body is like a can opener. But no dragon has ever scratched my father. Not a single scale has even been damaged.
What would it mean to have a new dragon king?
Seth asked. Raxtus chuckled.
Not going to happen. Here we are, the royal vantage.
They emerged onto a high balcony above a huge, open-air arena. Below, dragons gathered on all sides to watch the contest. The sleek, white dragon with crystal blue eyes already rested in the balcony, gazing below.
"Hello, Mother," Raxtus said. "This is Kendra, Seth, and Tanu, along with Lord Dalgarel and his daughter Eve."
"I am Reyna," the dragon said with a mesmerizing voice. "I'm sorry Madrigus interrupted your feast. Waste of a strong dragon."
Down below, Celebrant entered one side of the arena, Madrigus the other. The sunset was fading, but magical globes of light flared to life around the arena, bathing it in sterile, white radiance. Seth studied the challenger. Madrigus had a relatively short, thick neck supporting a large head and wide horns. The huge plates of his scales armored him like a tank, and spikes protruded everywhere, some straight, some barbed, some hooked, all sharp. The swollen lump at the end of his tail bristled like a pineapple.
"To honor your centuries of service, I offer you one last chance to yield,"
Celebrant said loudly.
"Choose banishment and live."
"I return the same offer,"
Madrigus replied.
"Leave the crown and go into exile."
"Madrigus is so dead," Raxtus murmured. "I think he's hoping to rattle Father by challenging him in front of guests and by being rude. It's going to backfire. He's just making him angry."
"This is conduct unbefitting a member of my personal guard,"
Celebrant said.
"I strip you of all rank and honors. You die a rogue and a traitor."
"The honor of your guard was disgraced the moment you added your son,"
Madrigus said.
"You expelled Obregon for Raxtus. Being a member of your guard was once a rare privilege. Your nepotism turned it into a disgrace."
Seth glanced at Raxtus, who stared into the arena in silence, still as a statue.
"It is not your place to question your king,"
Celebrant said.
"I have reasons for all I do. Obregon can fill the vacancy you have created. Two other dragons have challenged me of late. How many of our own must perish?"
"They were weak,"
Madrigus said.
"No dragon living has a chance against me, but they had less chance than most,"
Celebrant said.
"Now that I consider it, both of them knew you well. Hodenholm and Rondet. Did you put them up to it?"
"I may have helped the fools toward their folly,"
Madrigus said.
"Fanned the flames of stupidity."
"You were testing me,"
Celebrant said.
"Studying me. To prepare for today."
Madrigus gave a roar that could have rivaled volcanoes. Hands over his ears, Seth felt the air trembling and stared at the many rows of razor teeth made visible as if multiple mouths were nested within one another.
"Very well,"
Celebrant replied as the last echoes faded. Lowering his horns, Madrigus charged forward with astonishing speed. Celebrant twisted out of the way at the last moment, ducking a swipe from the club tail and trading sides of the arena.
"Dole,"
Celebrant remarked.
Are you going to run from me all night?
Madrigus asked. For the